Got it. Here we go. Writing to us at mynorthwest.com is a good thing to do. So is coming through the Steer Roofing text line at 98973. Another good thing to do. It's nice to also to get the letter read on air by Tom or myself, and then to have the teeny tiny later. I mean, this has got to be like this. That you know what? I think you could have a big heavy something or other fall on you and you'd be fine. Like, can we get that off you? No. You know what? The teeny tiny letter lady read my letter on the air and I'm perfectly content. Right, Tom? I'm ready to meet my maker.
You almost said teeny tiny letter. I think the teeny tiny lady ought to read a teeny tiny letter.
That would be good. Oh, here comes the wooden wagon now. The wooden wagon coming in. Just one horse, but apparently tomorrow, Sean is bringing a horse in with him after taking one day of veterinarian medicine. And he's got a new horse. And let's bring that microphone in there close enough we can listen to teeny tiny. See who's holding on to that pickle jar of hers. Hang on.
No. Is my pizza going to be covered in cocaine today?
Is no.
Oh, all right, diving into the deck. Oh yeah, boy! More bad news for Boeing. Tom, do you see that? A lot of people are very excited to take video of the engine on fire. I thought the most interesting thing was nobody was panicked. I guess the pilot at that point gets on and explains that the power of these engines is such that we can lose one. And we're still going to make it. We're going to turn around. It must have been scary for people. They've done some initial investigation. The blades inside, one of them had broken off entirely. The other one was messed up as well. And then it caused kind of the cowling or the outside of the engine to break off. Scattered down onto the ground below. Amazingly, no one is killed from the debris that falls. But certainly Boeing then has to make adjustments. And then,
well, they're...
What?
Yeah, those adjustments are a global grounding of these 777s that have this Pratt & Whitney engine.
I understand.
So
I use the word adjustments, Tom, because I have stock in Boeing, and I thought it'd be better to talk about making some minor
The video purportedly from onboard United Flight 328, terrifying. The right engine on fire, most of the covering gone. While on the ground, shrapnel and what appears to be the engine cowling in the front yard of a home in the Denver suburb of Broomfield.
Okay. Again, as a shareholder of Boeing, this guy's making, you know, he's really pushing it. You hear him? He's really trying to make something of it.
Nearby, more chunks and pieces littering a soccer field. It was just after 1 p.m. Mountain Time when the pilot on the 777 flying from Denver to Honolulu with 241 people on board declared an emergency.
Mayday, mayday, United 328 heavy, mayday, mayday aircraft,
328 heavy, say again,
can you
read all that again?
Yeah, United Denver departure, United 328 heavy, mayday aircraft, just experienced a engine failure, need a turn immediately.
On the ground, witnesses heard a loud bang, then saw a puff of smoke as debris began falling from the sky.
They heard the boom, looked up, and saw stuff just raining down from the sky, so we took shelter.
United says the plane experienced a rare, uncontained engine failure where the engine fails and explodes rather than containing the failure. Despite widespread debris, no one on the ground was hit.
Remarkably, we have had no injuries reported yet. So considering how nice the weather is today compared to last weekend, the amount of debris and how far it stretches, the dog park is right here, obviously the turf field behind me, and we have had no reports of any injuries.
The incident drawing parallels to an uncontained engine failure 3 years ago on a Southwest Airlines flight that made an emergency landing in Philadelphia. One passenger was killed when the shrapnel punctured her window, pulling her from her seat. Today, no injuries. The flight landed safely at Denver International.
Okay.
Boy, I remember that. The woman is sucked out. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Awful. Awful.
These are dramatic.
They have some idea. They have some idea of what they think might have caused it, and abundance of caution, they're going to ground.
Getting to the bottom of this mechanical failure is going to be critical. Or did the engine ingest a flock of birds as it took off from DIA, or perhaps even a drone? All of those possibilities right now are on the table.
I know that NTSB is already mobilizing so that they, an independent agency, can provide right away information as they piece together what has happened.
Okay. There we go.
So, yeah, in most of the speculation I heard was that they just think this particular engine. What, by the way, just to put this in perspective, there are 1,600 777s out there. Only 174 mm-hmm. of the 1,600 are equipped with this particular engine. Now, uh-huh. I was asking earlier, and I guess we need somebody who knows more about planes to know, is the plane, when you have the Pratt & Whitney, is it designed to accommodate the Pratt & Whitney? Can you put a different kind of engine in there or not? But at least, so the silver lining for Boeing is, even if they have to ground all of the 777s with the Pratt & Whitney engine, that it's a small minority of the fleet of a 777s. I just heard at the top of the hour on CBS that the engine itself it's like a 35-year-old design. They said so clearly it's worked and been working. So the question might come down to maintenance of that those particular engines that has been shoddy, or that maybe they're just aging issues. I don't know how old those particular engines, that particular engine that went, you know, bad, if there's something about that. So I hadn't heard the flock of birds until recently. Yeah. So.
Moving on to Merrick Garland, gets a chance to sit before the senators there in Capitol Hill. He will be the most likely. They're not going to reject this guy, right?
They say that he has support on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
Unless something untoward comes up in the next day or two, I don't think that's probably going to happen.
He'll become the AG.
From 1995 to 1997, I supervised the prosecution of the perpetrators of the bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building, who sought to spark a revolution that would topple the federal government. If confirmed, I will supervise the prosecution of white supremacists and others who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, a heinous attack that sought to disrupt a cornerstone of our democracy, the peaceful transfer of power to a newly elected government. And that critical work is but a part of the broad scope of the department's responsibilities.
Okay. Have they determined that it was white supremacists that were rushing into the Capitol of the 800? Is that what it is?
Well, I don't know.
Everybody is a white supremacist now.
Of the individuals, haven't they charged like 132 or 144 or something like that? And a lot of them have. The individuals, like they're 14 Oath Keepers and, you know, Proud Boys, you know, 20 Proud Boys and all this. So there is clearly a connection. Whether they're all there, we don't know. And that's what the investigation will prove. I thought it was kind of, I don't know what you'd, if it's nervy, if it's politically risky to announce that that's his number one priority, because remember, there were a number of Republicans who feel like Trump got a raw deal with the impeachment, and they might, sort of find that as a vendetta investigation more than anything else. But, he said it. Go ahead.
I was going to say the new boogeyman for everybody is the white supremacists. So apparently they are everywhere.
They've earned it.
And they're trying to take over, and this guy is going to find them because apparently they are everywhere. I mean, turn around, there's probably a white supremacist right beside you. Of the 168 people that died there in Oklahoma when that bomb went off, Timothy McVeigh, was what he was really trying to do, overthrow the government?
Well, I don't know. Again, it's like coincidental. It's like perfect timing for the guy who actually do that prosecution. He says, yeah, back when that happened, I don't know how many, a decade or so ago, when that happened, he was calling for the same kinds of things that some white supremacists might now. And it's much more popular. There are more people behind that than it was at the time. At least that's what Merrick Garland's take is so far. You don't buy it?
Yeah. To connect the two, you don't need a lot of evidence. You just need a lot of feeling to continue to.
No, he's an attorney general. You need evidence.
They're gonna root out the white supremacists, because here's the narrative: the country is racist. Systemic racism is everywhere. Everywhere.
That's different from domestic terrorism.
Everywhere, and white supremacists are everywhere. So combine those two. And then we're going to finally get justice for everybody. So this is the new thing. I don't know anything about Merrick Garland. good for him. He probably will most likely get appointed. They asked him about whether or not the two cases, one of them is a New York attorney, New York federal investigation into Hunter Biden. I think they've determined that wasn't Russian propaganda. And then the other one is John Durham's looking into what happened in 2016, 2017 with the Department of Justice and the Obama White House. So those two things are going to keep going. I guess, did they ask him about that, Jacob?
Yes. The next cut in this script is them asking them about Durham.
I got it. It's Josh Hartnett.
Let me ask you about assaults on federal property in places other than Washington, D.C., Portland.
No, this one. Hold on, Judge.
With respect to Special Counsel Durham's investigation, I expect that he will be allowed to complete his investigation. If confirmed, will you commit to providing Special Counsel Durham with the staff, resources, funds, and time needed to thoroughly complete the investigation?
So, Senator, I don't have any information about the investigation. As I sit here today, another one of the very first things I'm going to have to do is speak with Mr. Durham to figure out how his investigation is going. I understand that he has been permitted to remain in his position. And sitting here today, I have no reason to think that that was not the correct decision.
All right.
All right, then.
I got two last cuts. Do you care which ones they are? I got asking about whether or not the buildings they tried to get him on, the federal buildings that were attacked in Portland, was that a crime similar to what happened on January 6th? Garland goes, well, actually, when the process of the Electoral College vote being tallied and then the interruption occurs, that is a political act of, you know, a domestic terrorism. When the building is empty and there's no action of the public going on, no judge is there, and you're not getting in there to disrupt, you're just trying to set the building on fire and kill the people that are in there, that is not domestic terrorism. That's
you just said that when the building is empty.
Well, there might be somebody
killing
in there.
The people inside.
Well, I mean, is the building completely empty, or is there a possibility that there might be somebody in there that gets caught on, set on fire?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
there's no action, set up the premise. There's no public action being done in regard to, you know, legal action where a judge is sitting or there's some sort of business being done. But
yeah.
So he's able to split the hair on that one, and they weren't able to catch him on it. But then finally.
By the way, Corey John, Booker, on that domestic terrorism business. It was Trump's administration, Trump's own FBI and the Justice Department, that they were the ones who declared that domestic terrorism is their number one concern rather than international terrorists. So it's not just, I think you're trying to imply that, oh, it's just the new Biden administration or the Democrats or
well, it depends
Merrick
on
Garland.
What jersey you're wearing. If you're Black Lives Matter, you're a domestic terrorist as far as Donald Trump was concerned. If you're a Black Lives Matter terrorist, I'm sorry, well, Black Lives Matter protester shooting and killing people and destroying personal property and you're a Democrat, then those are people that are they have every right to do that, right?
Christopher Wray said that domestic terrorism spawning from white supremacy was the biggest concern. Obviously, if there was a Black Lives Matter person who was bombing buildings, I mean, I'm sure they could be added to that list, but that's not the number one concern of the FBI at the time. And this was even under the Trump administration.
Does the FBI consider Antifa to be a terrorist organization?
I don't know. It's not as prevalent. It's not as big a concern, they say, as the white supremacist movements. That's all. Yeah. So if you say yes, if there are 10 Antifa to every 100 white supremacists, then the bigger concern is the white supremacists.
I'm not denying that there are numbskulls like the people that were in Charlottesville that were marching around. Most of them were just complete idiots with their flags and whatever else they had, and they're screaming and yelling about the Jews, right? Then you get the one complete fool that gets in a car and murders that woman when they drive into all those people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that white supremacists are everywhere lurking like the KKK, you know who's a racist. They'll tell you they're a racist. They brag about being a racist. They go online and say horrible things about people, Catholics and Jews and Asian people. I mean, it's not hard to find one. They're proud of it. They're proud of the fact that they hate groups of people, and they think that hatred
proud
elevates
boys.
Them as a person, right?
Yeah,
proud boys. I don't know if they're racist. No, I don't think that. I don't know if they fall into the. They're misogynists,
they
and
do.
they they're well, okay, whatever. Again, it's easy. If you're white, you're already very close to being a white supremacist because you have white privilege.
No, John, don't
oh, really,
exaggerate.
Tom?
Okay. We're talking about Trump. Okay. We're talking about Trump's administration.
Trump's
I know
gone.
You want
Trump's
I know, gone. But even back then, when you know Christopher Wray testified, he said that the number one concern is domestic terrorism, and it's the white supremacist domestic terrorism that he's most concerned about because they have it now, thanks to, as you say, social media. They now connect with each other much better.
Here's Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, also known as, who was he? Not Octavius. Who was he? What famous person did he say he was?
Oh, Spartacus?
And I'm wondering if you could just conclude by answering the question about your motivation and maybe some of your own family history in confronting hate and discrimination in American history.
Yes, Senator. So, you know, I come from a family where my grandparents fled anti-Semitism and persecution. The country took us in. And I feel an obligation to the country to pay back. And this is the highest, best use of my own set of skills to pay back.
Wow.
Wow.
Emotional.
Cory knew what question to ask. All right. I hope he gets in there. I've read some stuff on him. He seems like a decent human being that sort of calls him like he sees him. I know he missed the chance to be on the Supreme Court. Then he ended up on another court, and he'll be in there working. You know, it is a weird job because you're there serving at the will of the president, but you can't help but, like, be kind of the guy. You're supposed to have the separation, right, Tom?
Yeah.
Between
he said
the White
he's
going
to be a lawyer
you're
for the people,
to be the
not
attorney
the president.
General for the state of the entire United States, right?
Yeah.
But you can't help but sort of be, was it Eric Holder referred to Barack Obama as his wingman? You can't help but all of a sudden create this sort of relationship, and then people start to think, well, they're too cozy between the president, right, and the attorney general. There's just too much.
Well, won't be that cozy if he goes
and
after
talks
Hunter.
To Bill Clinton about their grandchildren for 30 minutes. That kind of stuff. Alrighty. The teeny tiny lady is fast at work now, trying to make sure that the letter of the day is chosen. She gets right up to the wire on that one. Cam Newton is involved in a sports program. I guess it's 7-on-7. Football, is it yep. I don't know if it's contact or not. Is it like a flag football? I can't quite tell from what the kids are wearing, but
yeah, I'm not
he's
sure
a coach
either.
He's a coach and he's there and the kids recognize him, and I'm sure this kid, if his apology is at all sincere, you and I both agree he probably didn't write it, but man, I guess he's getting egged on by the other players. This is Cam Newton. This guy is like in a class by himself as far as an athlete's concerned. Plus, by the way, even if he wasn't an athlete, he's an adult. You're a kid. And you don't talk to an adult the way this kid was kind of sassing Cam Newton. What was he thinking was going to happen? That he was going to, Cam Newton was going to cry? Or this kid would become, you know, more popular because he's flipping crap over to Cam Newton's shoulder, Tom?
I think so. I read all about this and heard all about this before I finally saw the video, which gives me the video actually changed my take a little bit. But what I think he was doing was imagine the kind of trash talking you would do about Cam Newton when Cam Newton wasn't there. So let's say your favorite quarterback is Russell Wilson and the other guy's favorite quarterback was Cam Newton, and you guys sort of trash talk each other. Oh, he's a free agent. He was terrible. It felt to me that that was the tenor of this kid's talking, and yet he's actually talking to Cam Newton saying, hey, you're a free agent. You know this? I think the kind of banter that he was throwing at Cam Newton was just like the kind of trash talking that friends do, you know, among themselves about famous people. And that this was, and I actually thought, and this is, I may be reading this wrong, but I was surprised how well Cam Newton took it. And in fact, Cam Newton, I think, ended up it looked to me like he had a smile on his face and was kind of like joshing with him. I actually have a different take on everything now that I've seen it, given how I thought I was going to react. I think they were. Okay. It was just kind of this back and forth. But I'm in the minority, right. I think, on that one.
You're a free agent. I'm rich. You're free agent. I'm rich. You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're a free.
You're free agent. You got to be poor. You got
yeah,
be
well,
poor.
He says, you're a free agent, meaning that he doesn't have a team because he did had a lousy year with the Patriots. He might end up going back there. And so then Cam Newton's response to him, which some people are saying is childish, says, I'm rich. And he has that big grin of Cam's. And he says, you're going to be poor because you don't have a team. And he says, I'm
rich. Let me talk to your dad. Where's your dad? You're a free agent.
Where's your pa? Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then later on, Cam Newton puts this longer.
No, ain't no disrespect. You know, if you want some attention, I'm gonna give you some attention. The right way, bro. The right way. When do y'all play?
We play tomorrow.
What was y'all record today then?
1-2 No, 2-1
What did you do? No, I wasn't able to see because y'all was too.
It's cameras on me.
All right, bro. What did he do, man? Does he play?
He got speed.
He got speed.
No, he's playing. He's speed.
Oh.
You gonna see? Don't act shy, bro. I'm asking. I couldn't see today. You watch YouTube? I know you do.
We do that though.
You rep that
205? 205? 205. Okay, cool, bro. I'm just please don't be one-dimensional. Like you said something to me, then I go, well, I'm really trying to talk to you. I'm not trying to like crack no jokes. I'm just really trying to ask a simple question.
Okay. There's a bit more of a coach in him there, huh?
Yeah. I actually, okay, I mean, most people are coming to Cam Newton's defense. A lot of players saying, man, he was a lot more mature about it than I would have been if somebody was, yeah, you know, some punk kid was doing that. I actually think that it all came out well in the wash, so to speak. I mean, I just think it seems like it ended okay. The kid apologized. I don't know if he needed to abjectly apologize as much as he did, but, you know.
Yeah, good. I mean,
it just,
I don't know, you're a fan, you're in the stands, you get, and he says, he called him on it, you're getting lots of attention. Now I'm talking, now I'm going to give you attention. So now let's talk about how well you play. This is a piece, I don't know who has this, the time to rebuild youth sports in America, the fact that they look across the United States and they say that as each one of these cities and parks and counties have less and less money, then baseball fields go away or basketball courts go away and kids don't play. And the only kids that do play are living in rich houses and rich neighborhoods and rich places that can afford to have an AstroTurf field and can afford to have the lights on at night and reinvest or invest in these poor communities so that kids can have a place to play baseball, not football, but they're primarily looking more at baseball, right?
Well, anything that you can do on a park. And yeah, I think a football, maybe flag football might be sort of a more possible for these park and recreation spaces. What they're saying is that right now, so the economy has taken a hit in various places, and they said that parks and recreation budgets have plummeted like something like 31% before the pandemic. And then in the, with the pandemic, they're even cut, farther. And they said, that's probably not on everybody's priority list. Oh, well, listen, to get back the economy back on its feet, to get this, engine roaring, probably not putting money into a parks and rec. And this guy's argument is, no, this should be one of the first things. This deals with kids, kids' interaction with other kids, playing sports. This is the kind of thing that can, you know, bring kids together and bring them the kind of social cohesion that the pandemic has and the lockdown has sort of prevented. And because of that, we need to think of this as a priority, not just as, oh, you know, it's like the way arts and music normally is treated in education. Well, it's like it's all gravy. He says, no, this could be central, especially since equity issues have risen to the fore because of the pandemic. Who benefits more from these park and rec things? Minority kids, poorer kids, kids that don't have the kind of rich access that wealthy white parents do with their kids because they're doing fine because they're all in their, their club teams.
I forget who it was I heard talking about baseball and the reason baseball doesn't do well in the inner city because you think about who taught you baseball.
Hmm. Why? Who teaches you baseball?
Your dad.
Okay.
Your dad takes you out in the back, teaches you how to swing the bat. You play catch with your dad. Your dad buys your first mitt. Your dad teaches you how to, you know, catch pop fly, stop a grounder, you know, all that. And this guy in baseball, I forget who it was, it may have been a sportscaster or something, saying because in inner city you don't have kids with fathers, you don't have kids picking up baseball. And, you know, also the fact that the field is probably a mess. But if there even is a field.
Huh, that's interesting. I mean, I played baseball. My dad never played baseball, but I think of the inner cities play stickball. There are no dads around for that, are there?
They still play stickball, Tom.
Yeah, well, it's a version.
I played it. I mean, I know it. You know, or half ball. The thing is, it's a half a tennis ball, and if you hit it, it goes up, it goes into the neighbor's yard. Then that's a double. It goes over the fence. That's a triple.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. Yeah. All right. All the good old days. All right. Let's just do a quick little. Just give me a little bit of that mailman song. Just a bit.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me.
That's good enough. All right, teeny tiny lady, she's over there. I can't get to her right now. Let's get to the letter of the day. But first, let's take care of all the rest. Tom?
We'll start off with the soda tax discussion. Dean in Gig Harbor weighs in. Let's tax French fries, hamburgers, ice cream, potato chips, etc., etc. It's just another huge tax grab by our liberal government. Unbelievable.
Wow. Nick from Orcas Island says, while the total number of people classified as obese in Mexico has increased since the sugar tax, the rate of increase has dropped precipitously, and that is attributed to the huge decrease in consumption of sugary drinks.
And area code 360, what about disallowing the use of EBT on soda and candy?
Mm-hmm. 360, John, eating less sugar absolutely helps with reducing obesity. Sugar addiction is real. It's like having cocaine on your pizza. That's true.
And area code 206, some Starbucks drinks have a lot more sugar in them than sodas, but don't get taxed.
It's true. Yeah, that is a little weird. Here we go. Polarizing politics, 206, says a lot of people and their Tinder profile have their political views. God.
And area code 206, Tom, politics have become toxic in this country. See the recent conspiracies of the Texas snow and freezing was Bill Gates doing.
Okay, 206. I propose the reestablishment of duels. I'm good with using muskets to keep things interesting. Maybe that would push us towards a more rational political debate. Okay.
On the Kevin Mather resignation, area code 425 weighs in. Seager's inflated contract has been a regular topic of discussion in the MLB world. He was probably getting ahead of the forthcoming comments.
How about that? 907 says Ichiro had an interpreter and played in this country for, 15 years? Why didn't he learn English? Or did he? After all that time.
And area code 425, I love the false outrage from Tom. Was he upset by Tim Matheson from Animal House saying it was great to finally have an English-speaking first lady again? Oh, please. I hadn't heard that. And yes, I'm outraged.
307, okay. Tom has moved from making America suck again to keep the Mariners sucking always.
Hey, without Mather, maybe they have a chance. Area code 206. Okay. How are the Mariners going to maintain their winning tradition without Kevin Mather?
Talking about black-owned restaurants, 206. Amen to that. Original Philly, my neighborhood hero.
All right. And area code 253 says, hey, Philly Dave is needing to do a Cairo spot for the original Phillies. It's wicked good. As his agent, he'll take compensation in beer. But I highly suggest none be paid pre the spot being out. Respectfully, Harold Carmichael, attorney at law.
Thank you, Harold. Harold Carmichael. Carmichael is number 17 for the Philadelphia Eagles. Todd in Gig Harbor, the guy who hates Rachel's music. Tell Rachel Piano Man is a better choice. By the way, I let Rachel out of my basement. Oh, that's good to know. Thank you, Todd.
That's good. Eric on 425. Well, Well said. I do not and will not go to a restaurant because of the color of someone's skin. I don't care. If the food is good, I will go.
There we go. And bump music. Joey the Garbage Man says, kickstart my heart for bumper music. Maybe Mullet Monday is back.
On Merrick Garland, area code 206, why can't we simply debate topics, not playing the unending game of whataboutism? Two wrongs make a right.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Teeny tiny.
Wow, a double letter of the day.
Double letter of the day.
Area code 206, Mr. Curly. As long as we're taking customer requests, I'd like to voice my concern. First, I have a fear of horses jumping into pools. I, too, have had a bad experience with that. And I'm also scared of small spaces. So I think we should release that little tiny lady in the pickle jar. Thank you.
Oh, boy. Really?
See what Balls in your now? Court, Mr. Curly.
Yeah, I think this is a bad precedent to set, too.
Yeah, yeah. Democracy is overrated.
No customer requests.
That's all she wrote.
I botched that.
Didn't write no more.
Didn't write no more.
She let the blue hanging around my
Why not? Strap it on, everybody. Here we go.